Okay, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, as always, to the Froelich family and the Froelich Financial Group for sponsoring our men's afternoon kollel. And we have specific sponsors today, Shoshana and Abram Sofer, in memory of his parents, Rav Shmuel Menachem ben Chayin Yaakov and Rivka Leah Basarov Zev. The Shama should have an aliyah. I want to continue with part two of our cruising considerations, halachic issues that come up when going on cruises. For that matter, when traveling to a hotel, to a resort, the main cruise one we discussed already last week when we talked about when you're allowed to embark on the cruise, disembark, and return onto the cruise ship. I just want to make a couple of points on what we said previously before we continue. First, if you go back 2 weeks on the issue of birthdays, I'm very gratified that people actually listen online because they write to me. It's even gratifying when they argue with me, because it means that they're listening, especially when they agree and they write it's a nice year. But anyway, I got an interesting email from Mishpacha of Rav Gifter, who sent me a letter that Rav Gifter had written in which the letter writer to him acknowledged something about a birthday, and he essentially wrote back, who cares that it's a birthday? We don't hold the birthday, that's not our thing. So that was his position on birthdays. Another chaver and colleague of mine wrote to me today on that issue, including the blowing out of candles in the River Vos Ephraim. We saw the River Vos Ephraim, who were not on mystical considerations, but simply based on halachic considerations, felt a person, he quoted the Kaf HaChaim, I believe it was the Kaf HaChaim, if you blow out a candle, Dama Barosho, you've taken your life into your hands, Kiner Hashem Nishmas Adam, the candle represents life, we don't blow it out, we don't extinguish it. So my chaver, I think very creatively suggested, if you want to be miyashiv the minog, if you want to defend those who blow out candles on birthdays, maybe it doesn't have a pagan origin, maybe what we're saying is the following. Hashem, today, this is the anniversary of when you blew the neshama into me. I'm blowing out the candle to say, don't take my neshama, I'm not ready. It's my birthday. You celebrate the birthday, you blow out the candle to say, I'm still going. Anyway, Klal Yisrael always had an effort to be miyashiv the minog, though it would still seem to me to be more correct if you can. I'm not sure you should make shalom bias problems or instigate conflict over it, but something to do. Another point that was raised on the issue of cruising, somebody who heard the cruising asked me to clarify about getting off the ship and getting back onto the ship on Shabbos if you know the ship is going to leave on Shabbos. Now, as we said last week, first of all, the point is mostly moot, because to get off the ship, even though you're technically allowed to go through the metal detector, if you don't have metal on you, you need ID, and you can't carry, there's no Erev. So there's a major technical obstacle, aside from the Shabbos atmosphere issue, there's a major technical issue. But if the technical issue could be surmounted, if you were on the ship, the Ramah we saw in Reish Mem Ches, was it? The Ramah said that if you're on the ship, Bein HaShemashas, you're on the ship before Shabbos, and you've been kohenated as your makom shvisa, you've established it as your place of residence, then even if you get off, you can get back on, even if it's going to move again. It seems to be an explicit Ramah, even if you can be machmir on it, but at least he defends the practice. Okay, we also last time, we talked about whether you're allowed to leave on a ship that is leaving port within 3 days, the Takan of Chazal, 7 or 8 reasons we saw why you're not allowed to. Do they apply today? The Me'iri, they don't apply today. And some Paskin like the Me'iri that are a large ship, have stabilizers. And others who say one should continue to try to observe the custom not to leave to a cruise on Thursday or Friday, according to the Gra. And according to others, as early as Wednesday, you're only allowed to leave on a Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, which still belong to the previous Shabbos. If you're leaving for the purpose of a mitzvah, and I would argue that a purpose of a mitzvah is not to instigate shalom bayis. So if your family's going on the cruise, you don't need to be the frummy who says, sorry, I can't leave until Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. You'll have to go without me. Just to try to be the kanai, if it's going to create machlokas within a family, let's say, who are all coordinated to go, would seem to me to be a dvar mitzvah enough to rely on the me'iri and the poskim who rely.
What if it's returning on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday?
If it's returning, what's the problem?
Leaving port on Wednesday on the return trip.
Why? It's a weekday. You're allowed to come back. It's not a problem. The metal detector we covered, we talked about the electric door lock, which, according to the Chazon Ish, if you close any electrical circuit, it's bona, it's a biblical prohibition. According to most poskim, it is a rabbinic prohibition if there's nothing that heats up or glows. Therefore, it's not actually mavir. You're not actually violating a biblical prohibition. So the electric door lock would be a dirabanan. And we talked about the creative solution of Rav Zilberstein. Rav Zilberstein, quarter of Yitzchak Zilberstein, if you remember, two creative solutions, one from his father-in-law, Rav Yoshev Zatzal, and one his own. One was leave a box of Godiva chocolates in your room, in your cabin, and you'll tip the people, and they'll say, oh, I have a tip for you, it's in my room, come! And then he'll open the door to retrieve his tip. He's opened the door for himself, not for you, and therefore you are allowed to benefit. And the other, when you check in, make a condition of your staying in that hotel or attending on that cruise, a condition that you'll be able to access your room on Shabbos in a way permissible to you. If you make that condition before Shabbos, when the non-Jew engages the electric lock to open it for you, they're not opening it for you, they're opening it for themselves, because that was the condition for them to be able to make the money off of leasing or selling or renting you your room. Those were the two suggestions. If neither of those suggestions were met, you can still ask a non-Jew to open the door for you if it's makom mitzvah. Why? It's a shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah. Asking a non-Jew to do malacha for you is derabbanan, is rabbinic. The electric kiwi said is rabbinic. It's a double rabbinic, a shvus de shvus. And makom mitzvah, onik Shabbos, accessing your things, getting to your room on Shabbos, makom mitzvah. Others have another creative solution, not halachically, creative technically, which is they'll put a piece of tape over the hole, which will mean the door, the latch will never catch, and it'll never lock. I would highly recommend putting your things in the safe if you're going to go with that solution. I don't really recommend that solution altogether. I'm not sure it's a good practice to leave doors unlocked. And you can rely on these other halachic opinions. What? If a circuit is closing as a result, I don't think so. Can you ask a non-Jew to press a button in an elevator? Again, this doesn't apply only on a cruise ship or only in a hotel, but it'd be a similar logic that we're talking about. That if you have difficulty walking up the stairs, then pressing the button in the elevator is like asking a non-Jew to do something that's rabbinic in a case of need. So how do you define that case of need? Do you need to go to the Kiddush? Do you need to eat upstairs at the Bar Mitzvah? Do you need to attend the Shtibel Minyan? Can't go to a Minyan downstairs? How do you define a Makom Tzarech? It would be a Shvus to Shvus. You assume the elevator is the Rabbanon, asking the non-Jew is the Rabbanon, Shvus to Shvus. If you can establish that it's a Makom Tzarech, then it might be permissible, or it might be permissible with a remez, with a hinting. I attended once a Pesach program many years ago when I was able to do such things and didn't have local obligations. And it was a very, very Hamish HaShkacha and a very, very firm program, and a program that was defined by the countless shiurim round the clock and throughout the day. And the guests in the hotel, there was a hotel that appointed people to operate the elevators, and the guests were getting into the elevators the entire Yontif, including Shabbos Chol HaMoed, and the non-Jew in the elevator would say what floor. And the Hamisha, Frum, Erlecha, Tzadikim, Gaonim, Yirei Shamayim, were all getting in out of the elevator. And I went to the program. I was younger, a shtickle more of a kanai back then. And I said, I don't understand, what are you relying on? So, Shvus to Shvus, Makom Tzorach, all the... So, Makom Tzorach, you have to go to a hotel for Pesach? In other words, if you're at the hotel and you're on the 37th floor... It's a makom tzarech to get to your room without a cardiac arrest, yes. But who said you had to go to the hotel and stay in the third? So how you define a makom tzarech? Is it in the situation, or but you didn't have to put yourself into that situation, is in itself its whole discussion. If you're talking about a person who's got physical limitation, disability, and the only way they can participate in davening in a simcha, the non-Jew pushes the button in the elevator. That's our practice in shul as well. It doesn't mean that you're lazy, and it doesn't mean that you're tired, and it doesn't mean your child's kvetching, you don't feel like carrying them up the stairs. It means there's a legitimate makom tzarech, then you can rely on this halachic calculation. What happens? You come to your room, and the cleaning crew who was in your room, the cleaning lady, the housekeeping, turned on the light in your room to clean the room, and they left it on. Are you allowed to benefit from the light that's in your room? Now you want to sit back, and now you just started the Daf Yomi, because 7.5 years from now you want a party. So you're going to sit and do the Daf Yomi in your room using the light that was left on by the housekeeping. Can you use that light? So we said, Maisa Shabbos, there's a prohibition. There's a rabbinic prohibition. You're not allowed to benefit from work a non-Jew does for you on Shabbos. Maisa Shabbos, you have to wait, in fact, after Shabbos, Bichdei Sheyasu, the amount of time it would take you to do that very malacha. So can you benefit from that light? And the answer is, yes. Why are you allowed to benefit from that light? Because the housekeeper did it for themselves. So the fact that you are continuing to benefit, it was not done for you, therefore it is not part of that prohibition, and you'd be allowed to benefit from it. Let's say now you don't want to benefit from that light. In fact, so much so do you not want to benefit from it, you actually desire the shluf. You learn the daf, and you chaza the daf, and now you're ready to go to sleep, and you need the light to be turned off. So what do you do? How do you get the light off? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Mincha Shlomo in Siman Yud Beis says that activating an incandescent bulb is a biblical prohibition. If you turn it on and make it glow, it's daraisa. But Rav Shlomo Zalman has a certain calculation that extinguishing an incandescent bulb is only a dirabanan. So that would be, again, a shvus to shvus. Amir al-Hakam asking the Nadru is rabbinic. Turning off the bulb is rabbinic. But makam tzarech, for a yid, is there a greater makam tzarech than I need to take a Shabbos shluf? So you need to sleep on Shabbos. That's Shainer b'Shabbos, Meshubach. What? So we'll see different bulbs in a moment. So certainly if it's an LED bulb, it would be fine. Certainly it's rabbinic. But even an incandescent bulb, which would be a candidate to be d'oraisa, is only to ignite it. To extinguish it, Shlomo Zalman says, is rabbinic. And therefore it's shvus to shvus b'makom tzorach, or makom mitzvah of oneg, and you'd be allowed to. What about you're on the cruise ship, and you found 9 other Jews, and now you could have a minyan? I went on one, I think I mentioned last time, I've been on one real cruise with my family. It was many years ago. The room is just starting to stop spinning now. And I was so excited. It was Yeshiva week, and we went on this cruise. And no offense, I love Jewish people, but I also didn't mind having a break from them. One distinguished Jewish professional I know used to go on a cruise every year, and he would look for specifically, he said, I sign up for the no Jews cruise. That's what I'm looking for, the no Jews cruise. So lo and behold, the first day I get on the boat, and if not 5 minutes later, I hear, Rabbi Goldberg, we've rounded up, we've calculated, Baruch Hashem, we have a minyan. You'll speak every day between Mincha and Maariv. So, Baruch Hashem. It's a great, great schus to serve Klal Yisrael. So we found that we had 10 Jews, and we were going to make a minyan every day. So now it's Shabbos, and you want to go into the room. We found a room, a conference room, you're going to make your minyan, but the light's off. Are you allowed to ask them to turn the light on? So that's a shvus, the shvus b'makom tzibur. If the tzibur needs... That's a shvus to shvus b'makom tzibur. For example, okay, what would be a shvus to shvus b'makom tzibur? If you're asking the non-Jew to carry a Sefer Torah for you, or the like, even not a shvus to shvus, a mir la'akam b'makom tzibur would be permissible, even if it's not only rabbinic, even if it were in a rishus harabim to ask the non-Jew to carry for you, you'd be allowed to, because that's considered to be makom tzibur. So that is some of the issues that come up with on Shabbos, with the lights, and so on. What about motion sensors? So a lot of hotels, cruise lines today, they've calculated to be able to be energy efficient. They want to save a lot of money. How they can save a lot of money? Why should they waste the lighting and the air conditioning on you when you're by the pool? When you're off the boat? When you're having a tiyul? Why should it be operating? So it's motion sensors. When you're in the room, it senses your presence. And then the air conditioning blows. And then the light illuminates. But if not, not. So can you leave the room if it's going to turn the air conditioning and the lights off? So could you leave the room? So leaving the room would seem to be permissible. We've discussed these issues recently, both in the context of Smichas Chaver, and I gave a chabura last month, 2 months ago, on the issue of Dabar Shein Mischavein and Psik Reisha. What does this mean? We're not going to review this topic intensely right now, but just to give you a sense. The Gemara quotes, the Mishnah quotes, a Machlokas Tanayim on the issue of Dabar Shein Mischavein. If I do act A, and B may or may not result when I do act A. So for example, I want to bring my chair from this part of the lawn to the other side of the lawn because I want to sit and watch and I want to sit and schmooze with a chaver. So when I schlep the chair across the lawn, it may or may not make a ditch in the lawn. A ditch in the lawn would be a malacha. One of the 39 creative prohibited labors called choresh. Chofer, to make a ditch, is a tolda of the malacha. And that's a biblical prohibition. So when I take the chair, I don't know the weight of the chair. And I don't know the softness of the ground. So I can't know with certainty whether the chair will or will not make that ditch. That's called the Davar Shein Mischavein, and it's a machlokas of Yudah Reb Shimon, and we pass in Davar Shein Mischavein is mutter. Davar Shein Mischavein is mutter. However, we qualify it. What if what I do A, B, result is not uncertain, it's not that it may or may not happen, it's certain. And the Gemara calls that Psik Reisha V'lo Yamos. Imagine you want to play with the head of a chicken. The Gemara gives the example. Children want to play with the head of the chicken. They really didn't have a lot of good toy options, you know, in those days. The chicken feet, right? What would they play with? Play jacks with the whatever. They didn't have good options. You want to cut off the head of the chicken, use the head of the chicken. So I don't have any nevach the chicken. I didn't want to hurt the chicken. I want the chicken to live a long and happy life. I just happen to need its head. So Gemara says, you'd say, psik resha v'lo yamas. That's absurd. Psik resha, can you cut off a head v'lo yamas and it won't die? If you do A, and A inevitably, invariably leads to B, then you are responsible for result B. What's an example of that? So the Gemara says, what if you're dragging not a chair, which may or may not, but you're dragging a heavy table, and the ground is soft, and you know it's going to make a ditch? Or a modern day example would be, I open my refrigerator door, and I know I left the light on. So all I want is to open the door because I want to access my Diet Peach Snapple. But when I open the door, I know because I left the light on that the light is going to go on. That's called a psik resha. Psik resha b'lo yamas. What if I don't know if I left the light on? Is that a davar she'ein mischaven or a psik resha? So that's what's called a safek psik resha l'sha'avar. It has its own name. A safek psik resha l'sha'avar. It's not a davar she'ein mischaven. Davar she'ein mischaven, when it comes to schlepping the chair and saying, I don't know whether it will or won't make a ditch, it's not that I could know, I just don't happen to know. It's that no one could know until it happens. In the case of the refrigerator light, it's not that there isn't some objective truth to whether the light is on or off. I'm just ignorant of that truth. That's not called a davar she'ein mischaven. It's not a real suffix. The only suffix, the only doubt, is that I'm ignorant of the information. But the information has already happened and is already available. That's called a suffix psik resha l'sha'avar. It's different than ordinary davar she'ein mischaven. Don't be a show-off. We're getting to that right now. I'm just joking. We're getting to that right now. I'm getting to that right now. So far we said, if I do A and B may or may not happen, I'm exempt. If I do A and B definitely will happen, it's prohibited. I'm not allowed to. It's called the psik resha. Why is that? It's a big machlokas achronim. There's tremendous lumdus. You should have come to my chabura last month. It was brilliant. I'm just joking. There was beautiful lumdus on why. Is it because if B definitely happens when I do A, I can't say that I'm not intending B? It's lacking kavana? Or is it that it's an extension of A? Is it that I'm liable for B because when I do A, I should know B is going to happen? It's as if I thought of B? Or is it, no, I didn't think of B. It's that when B happens as a result of A, B is an extension of A, and I know I did A, it's as if I did B. This lumdus with several nafkaminas, but the time is not now to explain why psik resha works. There's another category which we won't get into. It's called the malacha she'en tzrich legufa. In fact, Achronim ask that the case of cutting off a head of a chicken actually fits into the definition of a malacha she'en tzrich legufa, not of a psik resha. Now, what if it's going to be a psik resha? If I do A, B definitely will happen. But I don't want B to happen. So the Aruch, Tosfos quotes the Aruch, who says, it's a psik resha delo nichale. If it's a psik resha, it definitely will happen. But I don't want it to happen. It's not in my interest for it to happen. Then he says, it's permissible. You're exempt. It's permissible. And the other Rishonim, Achronim, expand that category not only from lo nichale, where I don't want it to happen, but they expand it to a case of lo ich pasle. I don't care if it happens. I'll give an example. I wash my hands for Netilas Yadayim. It's Sukkot, so I wash my hands for Netilas Yadayim. I'm in my backyard. I don't feel like going inside the house. So I have an idea. I'll just go over the grass and I'll wash my hands for Netilas Yadayim. Watering grass on Shabbos, on Yontav, is a malacha of Zoreya. It's a prohibited biblical activity. So I don't, but I say, Zoreya, who wants to water grass? I just want to wash my hands. I don't intend on watering the grass. But if you're washing your hands on top of the grass, if B is an inevitable automatic result of A, you're accountable for B. Good, because I want that grass to grow. Who doesn't want beautiful grass? But let's say my sukkah abuts my neighbor's backyard and my neighbor is my arch nemesis, my arch enemy. So I say I'm going to wash my hands on his grass. Because if his grass grows, it's lo nichale. I want him to have the ugliest, worst grass in the world. Now, with HOAs down here, I care what he has. We'll all get fined by one another, everything. I'll leave out that whole issue. But if it's my enemy, I don't want him to have nice grass. So when I wash my hands, I do A, and B, the grass is going to improve Zoreya, inevitably, invariably will happen, result B, but it's lo nichale. I don't want it to happen. Not the Aruch says it's mutter, it's a machlokas rishonim. We seem to paskin, in the case of lo nichale, something would be permissible, even in a case of lo ich pasle. Why am I sharing all of this with you? Because it brings us to the case of the motion sensors. So if you walk out of the hotel room, if you walk out of your cruise room, and it's going to cause the air conditioning and lights to go off, it's a psik resha, but it's lo nichalei. You don't want it to go off because you really want your room to be cool and to be well lit when you return. So it's a psik resha, but it's a psik resha lo nichalei. Leaving your room would seem to not be a problem at all. And moreover, it's a grama. It's not an immediate consequence. The problem is, what about entering your room? And you're going to activate. When the guest enters the room and the sensor picks up, now it's going to go on. And now you have a case of a psik resha, denichale. You want the lights on. You want the air conditioning to be kicking in. So one potential solution is to ask the non-Jew to go into the room before you. Again, the Godiva chocolate solution. So the non-Jew is entering the room for himself. That would be one solution. But I'll tell you even more. You could ask the non-Jew to open the door and go in for you, even if there's nothing in it for him or her. Why? Here's a very, very important kula to know. Mishnah Berurah paskins this way. We paskin that a psik resha, that amira la'akam on a psik resha is mutter. Amira la'akam, I can't ask a non-Jew to do anything that I can't do. And a psik resha, if I do A, B automatically happens, I can't do it. But I can ask a non-Jew to do A, even though B will result. In other words, the non-Jew is not muzhar in psik resha. Amir la'akam on a psik resha is permissible, which means that if you left a light on in your fridge, you can find a non-Jew and ask them to open the fridge. Not a problem. It's amir la'akam, it's a psik resha. If you have no access to hot water, but you have a, you know, Zephyr Hills water cooler with a hot water spigot, you could ask the non-Jew to get you hot water. When they release the hot water, cold water will enter and it will now cook. That's a malacha. But it's a psik resha. All you want is the hot water from the spigot. You're not interested in the new water that's going to enter. It's a very handy kula to know that a amir la'akam on a psik resha is mutter, which means that if you ask the non-Jew to go into the room, even if there's no benefit, there's no Godiva chocolate in it for them, you just say, could you open the room for me? And now they kick the sensor in. As long as the non-Jew is the one who's kicking the sensor on, then it would be something which is permissible. Now, a lot of public restrooms today, I have not seen it in cabin rooms or in hotel rooms yet, but public restrooms have electric sensors on the toilet, on the base akisei, on the kisei itself. So the question that a lot of the ships do, again, for the same reason, it's efficiency and so on. So on Shabbos, can you use such a toilet? So what would be the malacha of the sensor? It's an issa d'rabbanan, if we assume. It's an issa d'rabbanan. In a case of Kavod HaBrios. Kavod HaBrios, the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Yutes, says that Kavod HaBrios is docha, certainly a dirabanan. Kavod HaBrios supersedes. An inability to properly relieve yourself would be a violation of human dignity. Kavod HaBrios, human dignity, supersedes certainly a rabbinic prohibition, maybe even more. The real question that comes up, what? Oh, so... Excellent. So the real question that comes up is the following. Where I'm eating, there's a bathroom 4 feet away. And if I use that bathroom, it has an electric sensor. And I'll be able to get back to the buffet as quickly as possible. I won't lose my space in the buffet. And if I can't use that one, and I have to use one with a traditional flush, then I have to go to my room, I got to make my way across the ship and up 3 flights of steps and find the nudge to open the room. It'll take me 20 minutes. The hefsid maruba from the buffet, what I will miss out. I could have been fressing in those 20 minutes, what I could have consumed and filled my belly with. It's never retrievable or recoverable. Is that enough of a loss to justify even lechatchila using the more local bathroom? So it might depend on how you view why the toilet is flushing with the electric sensor. Is the electric sensor making the toilet flush? Is that for you, or is that for the next person who's going to use the bathroom? I'm sorry to offer this lumdus. I'll let you spell out the lumdus. But if it's for the next person, so it's a psik resha, but it's lo ichpaslei. Lo nichalei, lo ichpaslei. You don't want it to kick in, because you don't want to be over an iser. You're very happy to be able to take care of what you need to take care of and get back to the buffet. It's really flushing for whoever's going to come in the bathroom next to have a proper environment for the bathroom. For you, it's lo ichpaslei. For you, it's lo nichalei. My colleague and dear friend, Rabbi Flug, makes a little bit of that argument in an article he has on this. So because of that, because this is rabbinic in nature, the whole prohibition of the electric sensor, there are those who would be lenient and say, you don't even need to make, you can rely on it lechatchila. When I say lechatchila, I don't mean you should install such a toilet in your bathroom at home, but I mean that if you're on the ship and it would be inconvenient, to have to find another bathroom, another toilet, you can rely on the fact that it's a psik resh l'ali chalei, that it is not specific for you in that situation. Oh, excellent segue. It's as if I'd mamish, as if I paid you for that. What about Friday night candles? So we're dealing with Shabbos on the ship. We haven't dealt with kashrus on the ship. We may not get into that until part three. So don't book your cruise until we get to next week, until we get to part three, because I'm going to have some good leniencies for you about the food options on the ship. But what about candle lighting? Where do you light your candles on the ship? And what should you light on the ship? The ship is not going to be very happy with you if you bring your leichter and you have you're up to 247 grandchildren. So you set up all over your room and you're going to light for each grandchild. And Baruch Hashem, your Urein Alach, you're going to light for your great-grandchildren all over. They nor their fire smoke detector are going to be very, very happy with you. So what should you light? Why should you light? And so on. You have source sheets there a little bit? So I just gave you some Rashi Prakha. With most of this, I'm really speaking outside and giving you the overview, but I just wanted to learn to see a little bit of it with you inside. First of all, let's just talk about the mitzvah of lighting candles. What is the mitzvah of Neir Shabbos? Is that a mitzvah d'oraisa d'rabbanan? It's a mitzvah d'rabbanan to light the Shabbos candles. Why do we light the Shabbos candles? So very, very interesting. There are two reasons which are given. Let me give you a nafkamina between the two reasons. Is the mitzvah to light candles, or is the mitzvah to have a lit room? What's the nafkamina? If it's already lit, do you have to extinguish it and turn it back on? If the lights are on in the room, do you have to turn them off and turn them back on? Or do you say, no, shine, it's lit. What I needed is a lit room. So there's two reasons given for Shabbos candles. One can see the mitzvah of Shabbos candles as being both part of the mitzvah of Oneg and the mitzvah of Kavod. The mitzvah of Oneg means what we are come to know and accustomed. Shalom bayis. What's going to happen? You come home, your kid left a backpack in the middle of the floor. You trip and you go flying and you land and you bruise your knee. You stub your toe because they left the toy in the middle of the room. You're going to yell at the kid. You're going to yell at your wife. You're going to yell at your mother-in-law. You're going to yell at anyone you could yell at and blame for that. Your Shabbos is ruined because you didn't see what was right there. You tripped, you fell. If it's an illuminated, lit room and you can see what's in front of you, then you're going to have a greater shalom bayis, and that's a dinner onik Shabbos. The pleasure of Shabbos, the pleasure of seeing what you're eating, the pleasure of seeing the brachas that are right in front of you, your family, your friends, the pleasure of your single malt scotch, the pleasure of your fine wine, the pleasure of your beautiful divrei Torah read from a sefer. Onik Shabbos is to have a lit room. That could be fulfilled passively. If it was already lit from before Shabbos, who says there's a mitzvah to light? That is the consequence, the result of already being lit. But there's another mitzvah. And the other mitzvah is what's called Kavod Shabbos. Kavod Shabbos means to honor the Shabbos. And the Rambam writes, you fulfill Kavod Shabbos when you light the candles on Erev Shabbos. The fact that they have to be lit on Erev Shabbos. So the Brisker Rav in the Chidush HaAgrach al HaShas, Rabbi Yitzhak Zev Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav, Revelvo, says that there are two mitzvahs including Shabbos candles. We think of Shabbos candles as one mitzvah. There are, in fact, two mitzvahs in Shabbos candles. This comes up, again, the nafkamina I mentioned, which is that Tosfos quotes an opinion, that if there's already a candle lit in your home, you don't have to light candles. And Rabbeinu Tam rejects that opinion. And the Brisker Rav understands, what are they debating? They're debating, is the mitzvah din of Oneg, the result of being lit, or a mitzvah of Kavod, the act of lighting? And the Brisker Rav says, we require both. You need to show the kavod to Shabbos on Erev Shabbos of lighting and have the result of being lit. Tzvei dinim in Neir Shabbos, in having Shabbos candles. Where should those Shabbos candles be? So the kavod Shabbos, to light the candles in honor of Shabbos, designated for Shabbos, in theory could be anywhere. You've done something special to introduce Shabbos. But the oneg of Shabbos has to be in a place where you're going to get and you're going to derive the oneg. So where? So do you light where you sleep? Do you light where you eat? This question comes up all the time. You're invited out on Friday night. Do you light Shabbos at your host? Do you light Shabbos in your home? Is it like Hanukkah candles? If your spouse is lighting Shabbos and you're apart for Shabbos, they're lighting and you're on the business trip, do you still have to light? Can be yotze with them? So of course you can't. Hanukkah is a din in the bayis. Ner yishu beso, it's a din in the home. Shabbos is a din in you. You have an obligation of Shabbos candles. So even if you're not in your home, you have to have light Shabbos candles where you are. What qualifies as candles to light for Shabbos? Happens to be, we read about it every Friday night in a little chapter called Vamem Adlikin, which deals primarily with the oils and the wicks, what's eligible to light. What that parak does not deal with, because it was not invented at the time, is electricity. Can you light electricity, an electric light? Does that qualify? Does that count for the mitzvah of Shabbos candles? So there's a big discussion. Let's look what the Shmir Shabbos says. What type of lights? So Shmir Shabbos says, "Amadlik neir Shabbos v'yantav b'neiros chashmal." If you're using electric light for Shabbos v'yantav, yesh lo ami lismoch. I'm on page one where I underlined on top. Shmir Shabbos kilchasa. You're lighting the Shabbos v'yantav candles from an electric. Sorry, you're lighting an electric. Yesh lo ami lismoch. You have upon whom to rely. V'gam yivarech al hadlakazus. So much so, he says, that you could make a bracha on electric candles. Uvavad sheyad lechavod Shabbos. As long as they're being lit for Shabbos. They would qualify as long as they're being lit for Shabbos. So Shmir Shabbos talking about incandescent light bulb is like a gachela shel mateches. An incandescent light bulb that glows is like a coal, a hot piece of metal, which the Rishonim consider to be esh. Notice, what are you doing when you're lighting a candle, a wick, a flame? You're lighting a fire. So just like you would violate the malach of mavir if you cause metal to glow, so if it's enough to be called a fire to violate it on the one hand, then it's enough to qualify to be called a fire to fulfill the mitzvah of Neir Shabbos with it on the other hand. Others say you can't call it a fire, because a fire, if metal's glowing, so that might be mavir, but it's not a fire in the sense that it has no fuel. Right? The candle has wax, has oil, it has a fuel which is driving it. But an electric light, which doesn't directly run on fuel, might not meet that qualification. There's a whole discussion back and forth. If you look here in the footnote, Chav Beis, Kein Das Harbe Achronim, that an electric light qualifies as Neir Shabbos Yontif, so much so that you make a bracha, and he quotes many, 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 including the Har Tzvi, including the Rogachover Gaon. Tomorrow night we're going to talk a lot about the Rogachover in our series on the American Orthodox Rabbinate. I had the great schuss tomorrow night of talking about Rabbi Teitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was very, very close with the Rogachover, and how the Rogachover's Svarim, Rav Yosef Rosen, genius, brilliant, photographic mind, how his Svarim, how we have access to his Svarim today, is not only a miracle, it's a miracle that cost his daughter her life. She left the safety of America to go back to be able to recover his manuscripts in order to retrieve her father's Torah, and she was killed by the Nazis as a consequence, as a result. Knowing the danger she was going back for, it's all story. Rabbi Teitz, of course, was instrumental in organizing and publishing the Rogachover's Torah. So the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Har Tzvi, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, the Rogachover, say that you cannot make a bracha on lighting. Why? Because that's not called lahadlik. Lahadlik has a specific connotation. Lahadlik has a specific meaning. And you turn on an electric light, that's not called lahadlik. That doesn't fulfill lahadlik. The electric light is a grumma, it's indirect. You're hitting a switch, which begins to close a circuit, which creates a flow of electricity, which results in a light. It all happens like that. So you don't tell that, you can't tell that it's indirect. But unlike lahadlik, unlike the act of lighting, it's something which is indirect, and therefore they say you cannot make the bracha. However, many others say that you can make the bracha. Not only do some say you can make the bracha, he quotes here in the footnote to the Shmir Shabbos, that some say it's even better. Hadlakas ner Shabbos b'neiros chashmal adifa al hadlaka b'psilus ushmanim. It's a cleaner light. It's a more pure light. It's a odorless light. It's a brighter light. Some even say maybe it's a better light. We don't pass in that way, obviously. Obviously. The Rosh Shlomo Zalman, I underlined his name there, d'yesh l'chalik ben ora chashmal sheba mitachanas hakoach dar izah chashar b'shas adlak kemadlik v'lo shemen kemet sherak somech hazeh shebuchu rega v'rega notzar zerem chadosh b'tachanah shlo yekla ba'ula mikodem v'u machmas amadlik mechamem amadlik harba pa'um b'shne achas ma'ashen ken amadlik ben samol ha'idei mitzbar shar zerem kvar tzavor v'nimtza besocho shapar mistabash yichom gam levarech. He distinguishes between the flow, or like we talked about, something operated where the electricity is already contained at that point. So this would seem to be a machlokas. The Shmir Shabbos paskins, you can rely on an electric candle, and you can even make a bracha on it. And we know that that's what we do when someone's in the hospital. Our wonderful Bikur Cholim has electric candles you plug in. You could even make a bracha, and you could turn on those, and you could turn on those lights. So one can argue that when you don't have a choice, you can use the closet light, you could use the bathroom light, you could bring your own plug-in light that would qualify to be able to make the bracha. Would that work for Hanukkah too as a machlokas? Some say if you're on an airplane, you bring a flashlight, and you turn the flashlight on the Yeah.
Now, that's incandescent. What about LEDs?
LEDs would, right. So they would, you would not make a bracha on an LED because there's no fire. That does not fulfill the issue of lahadlik and of making a fire. So Shlomo Zalman says, if the concern to refrain from reciting is the reliance on the power company, then make the bracha on the power on a flashlight with an incandescent bulb. So an incandescent bulb is what would qualify, not a LED, which is getting, I guess, more complicated in hotels and cruises. As the world is moving over to LED, that would not meet the criteria of being a fire. It happens to be there's a whole side issue, which we won't get into now, Shechter is very machmir on, which is if you're lighting candles in a lit room, then the light of the candle, you're not actually contributing anything, and it'd be a bracha levatala to make a bracha. Rav Shechter requires, and his wife's practice at home, is to turn the lights off, then to turn them on for the purpose of Shabbos, to make the bracha and light the candles, so both the candles and the electric lights in combination are the Nero Shabbos. But to light candles in an already lit room would not fulfill lighting candles, because the candles, Oneg and Kavod, are both meant to be contributing light. You're not contributing any real light. Shechter has a further chumrah. In fact, we were recently in L.A. for a Shabbos, and Rav Shechter was there as well, part of the same program, speaking. And my wife went to light the candles on Friday, and she lit it where we were eating, in the restaurant where we were eating. But Rav Shechter has a second chumrah, which is that sometimes you're at a hotel setting where there's a gazillion tea lights all near each other. That's also a bracha levatala he holds. For you to be lighting the 125th candle in the row, you're not adding any light. You can't call that, you're not adding to the ambiance, you're not adding to the light, there's no contribution of that candle, it doesn't meet the criteria for Neir Shabbos, and that too would be a bracha levatala. Rebbe Tzachter shared her surprise that my wife was lighting in that situation. Second day of Yontif, yeah. Also a big question. And when do you light? Before the, do you say a Shechiyonu at lighting Yontif? Do you cover your eyes before or after, and so on? She doesn't light. Right, she doesn't light. Second day of Yontif, she does not light. Correct. For that reason, because you can't turn the lights off and back on. Yeah, shh. So Rebbe Zin Shechter does not light candles the second day Yontif, because you can't turn the lights off and back on. So that's a chumrah of Rav Shechter, if you want to keep Rav Shechter's chumras. I don't believe it is the mainstream practice. So, what about where do you light? What about where do you light? So if you turn the page to Shmir Shabbos says the following. V'chein dinam shabal abatam anintzol mebeis avro b'malon ha'chadom ha'hem n'sheim v'ochli b'chadar ochel m'shutaf. If you're away at a hotel and you're eating in a dining room, haminagus shekol isha tadlik neiros b'bracha b'chadar ochel. The minag is, women do light and they do make a bracha and they do it in the combined dining room. V'tadlik saneiros b'kirav makam l'shulchan ochel shalahem v'lo tadlik osa b'pina m'rechekes m'makam achilasan. So if you're in the dining room, you're a fancy schmancy person at the Pesach program, you got your own dining room. But the candle lighting is set up in the corner of the main dining room, and you are in three rooms over because you're fancy schmancy pants, you got your own dining room, you have such a big family, Kanai Nahara. So then it'd be a problem whether you yotze the candle lighting. It's neither where you're sleeping, nor is it where you're eating. Where you're eating doesn't work where other people are eating. Where you're eating doesn't count where the buffet is. Where you're eating means where you're eating, says the Shmir Shabbos. You should light them close to your actual table, ideally on your table. One can light in the chadar ochel, and the others in their own room. But if you're lighting in the room where you're sleeping, you have to ensure they won't go out before the time you come home. Which is the same on a Friday night, even if you're not at a hotel or on a cruise, even if you're home. If you've been invited out to eat Friday night, you can light near the table where you're going to be eating. But even more ideal is to light in your home, but to light candles that will last long enough for you to come home. If you're going to light the candles, then you're going to go out for dinner. By the time you come home, those candles have burnt out. They've not contributed any oneg or kavod to you. And it could be a problem of you're not yotze the mitzvah, maybe even a bracha levatala. So you preferable to light at home, but at home, either to not leave until you've benefited from them before you go to your hosts, or for them to last long enough for you to benefit from them when they come home. That's candle lighting. What about, let's just finish up the Shabbos issue on the cruise.
Candles have to be in the same place where you eat.
Candles either where you're sleeping or eating. That's what we just said. What about the question of Kiddush? So believe it or not, most cruise lines do not provide a Kiddush cup. So what do you use for a Kiddush cup? Can you use a paper or plastic or styrofoam cup as a Kiddush cup? Do they qualify as a Kiddush cup? Rav Moshe deals with this in Ur HaChaim. Chelek Gimel, Simen Lamed Tes, conveniently in your packet on page number 3. And Rav Moshe is not a fan. Hinei b'davar kos l'kiddush m'shor l'asos ha'kosh n'asa min yar, shukli rak l'shah, sheshama asher asarti. When it comes to a paper cup, which is what's called a disposable cup, and you heard that I forbade it, emes ha'davar, that's correct. Taha ha'tosos m'farshim b'vrachos modim chem b'shabes, kedei b'shabes, we paskin on the criteria to qualify as a kos bracha. It has to be a kos shalem. Because of Magen Avraham, dafil nish barak basa shalemal anami pasul. Afshe gufa kos shalem. Let's say you have a base of a kiddush cup which is broken, even though the part that holds the grape juice, the wine, doesn't have a crack or a hole, is complete, but the base is broken. The Magen Avraham says that's not called a kosher shalem. Such a cup should not be used for kiddush, for something which is a kosher bracha. Kosher kiddush taron kol mashal taron kosher birchas hamazon. To qualify as a cup for kiddush, it has to meet the same criteria as a cup for benching. Bein she'akos noash ra'akos kazeh kosher birchas hamazon lekiddush. It has to be complete. It has to be whole. It has to be attractive. V'ro ani she'kosher niyashu urak l'sha apam zeh levad hu od garua de'ein lo shum chashivus shevada in a roy lebirchas hamazon lekiddush. So there's Rav Moshe, you have no choice, you have no choice. That's the cup you have to use, the cup you have to use. But Rav Moshe says he rejects using l'chatchila, a paper, a plastic, a styrofoam cup that is disposable. Why? Even though the truth is we call it disposable, you could use it many times, which comes up to Rav Moshe's opinion about aluminum pans and tefillas kelim, not for now. But even though you could use it many times, but by nature it's disposable. Something called disposable you don't value. If you don't value it, it's not a proper cup to be using for kiddush or birchas hamazon, maybe not even nitzilas yadayim. Rav Moshe says, if you have no choice, you have no choice. Some suggest, if you have no choice, double up the cup. If you double up the cup, it's more sturdy, it's preferable, it's better. That is Rav Moshe's opinion. It's also the opinion of Chacham Ben Zion Abba Shaul, who said that you cannot use a disposable cup for kiddush. However, Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Waldenberg disagrees. Page number 4. Kosos Niyarim, Ksherim, Tzitz Yidayim, Kiddush, Ve'avdala. And he writes this, the Talmud Echam, Asher Shalani, Mesh L'Kadosh, L'Havdala, Kosos Miniyar, Ba'asher Nitzrach L'Chach Maisa, Ba'asher Kishama, Ke'esh, Agon Moshe Feinstein, Oser, and Yasakti La'ayim B'Sifra HaKadosh. He says, I saw what he says. However, and he quotes Rav Moshe's whole opinion, and then if you turn the page, he says, Va'achar Ba'kasha Samachila, and after I ask Rav Moshe, the great Rav Moshe for Machila, in any row, basis li'isuro. It's a play on words, because Rav Moshe was talking about the basis of the cup. He says, I don't see a basis, I don't see a basis for his prohibiting. Ve'ena nidonim shavim klal ve'ikar. And the comparisons are not accurate. Tahasam aray asa haya mitchila in basis. V'lachayin chashinash barmena la'acham yichan poslo. Mishum shavur. V'lo nikre tu chayk fi'yitzir aso. If you have a broken cup, it means the cup was originally made complete, and it broke. And if a person looks at it now, they say that's a broken cup. But a broken cup is different than a whole cup that l'chatchila was made to be disposable. So the fact that it's disposable does not mean that it doesn't meet the criteria. Our disposable cups can last, you can use them, and even though they don't have the level of dignity or class as a silver or a metal or a glass becher, but he says it is not comparable to a becher that used to be whole and which broke, which is disqualified. It is whole. It was always whole. It's just a different kind of whole. It's a disposable whole. A disposable whole glass, therefore, says the Tzitz Eliezer, is not a problem. And he paskins, you can use a disposable cup for kiddush, for avdalah, and for netilas yadayim. He's in good company. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach also paskins that way, as does Chacham Ovadia. Rav Ovadia Yosef and Chacham and Chazon Ovadia also paskins that way, that it can be applied to the Tilas Yadayim, Havdalah, and Kiddush. And this is important to know. It does come up on a hotel, on a cruise, and so on and so forth, where you may not have it. If you look at Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa on the last page I gave you, on page 6, he writes, he says, Yadar Acher Kosnoi, you should prefer to find a beautiful cup. The truth is, in all that luggage you're going to schlep on with your wife's 20 outfits she's going to change the day on the cruise, you can sneak in a Kiddush cup. It wouldn't kill you to bring a Kiddush cup too, and you'll have a Kiddush cup. Why? Mishum Hidr Mitzvah. Hidr Mitzvah. It's a Hidr Mitzvah. V'lo yishtamish b'kos ha'omedes l'shimash chad pa'ami. He says you should not use a disposable cup. And if you look downstairs, he quotes the Rav Moshe. V'ulam im ein lo kos acheres las lan ba. But if you have no choice, And here he quotes Shlomo Zalman and the Tzitz Eliezer that if you have no choice, then you'd be allowed to. He says, "Near the kosos kela shemichadim lekach gam arashu chashuv m'shtam shem misud shach chashuvos ein lahak bebiyosrim ein kos acheras." Today, people use it. The truth is, Shmir Shabbos was written many, many, many years ago. Today, I want you to know, I'm invited into meals, and if you were to look at the table from afar, you'd say, "That is magnificent china, and that shiny silver, and what beautiful crystal." And then you sit down and you realize it's all fake and it's all disposable. Our disposable today is mamish, is yesterday's fine Schmecker Shabbos table, right? So today what we call disposable then would have been the fancy of the schmancy of the Delancey. So to say if you have no ideally bring your own Kiddush cup. You don't have access to bring your own Kiddush cup, then you can rely. Couple other quick things before we finish up. Grape juice wine. Cruise lines don't often provide grape juice or necessarily kosher grape juice. So according to the Rambam, it's best to make Kiddush and Avdallah on wine, not grape juice, and on wine which is not mevushel, to use on regular wine. But that's a chumash asad de kula. If you use non-mevushel wine and you don't finish the whole bottle, and you're going to have a housekeeper in your home, it's a chumrah to try to use non-mevushel wine that could lead to a kula of your drinking stam yenam or worse because the housekeeper interacted with the wine. So whether you keep that chumrah or not. I will add also that is a big machlokas. I once, when we had six daughters and I was trying to get brachos to have a son, so Rav Chaim Kanievsky told me to be makbid, to make Kiddush and Avdallah on wine, not on grape juice. On wine, not on grape juice. So first of all, one time after that we had Rav Shechter for a Shabbos and I was machabit him to make the Kiddush. And I said, I don't know if it works, the skula through shlichus, you know, whether he has to fine. But more than that, then we had Rav Asher Weiss for a Shabbos. So I asked the Minchas Asher, does Rav prefer to make Kiddush on grape juice and wine? He said, clearly you didn't learn Minchas Asher, Simon, whatever. He said, because I hold that grape juice is wine. He holds that grape juice has the din of wine, which when it comes to Al Dalad Kosos on Pesach, Rav Moshe's makel that you can rely on grape juice if you cannot take the wine. You dilute the wine, or if you can't, you have a little bit of wine, but you can rely on grape juice if you have no choice. Rav Asher, the Minchas Asher, holds you could use grape juice l'chatchila, because he makes an argument that grape juice is not different. Grape juice is wine. Grape juice is wine, he holds. So first of all, whether you're using Eina Mavusha wine, or you're using grape juice because you hold it is wine, but what if you don't have either on the ship? So what do you make Kiddush on? Of course you make Kiddush on challah. Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Siman Reish Ayin Beis. That we know you make Kiddush on bread. A few weeks ago when we discussed Kiddush and schnapps, we talked about that that's only true at night. At night you don't use Chamar Medina. Grape juice or wine or bread, but you don't do Chamar Medina. Only in the morning you do Chamar Medina instead of bread. Why? Because it wouldn't be nicker at lunchtime if you're making Kiddush on bread when the whole Kiddush is Hamotzi Lechem in Haaretz. No one would know you made Kiddush. So therefore, you use something else, a Chamar Medina or so on. And then you wash and then you start the meal. But Friday night, where it's obvious that you're making Kiddush because you're starting Vayir Vayiboker, and there's a full Kiddush, so then you can make Hamotzi, then the grape wine, grape juice, or Challah. Hold on. You didn't bring your Havdalah set. What do you do? So you could use Chamar Medina for Havdalah, beer or juice. Some even say milk can be used in place of a wine, soda not. Any spice that has a fragrance can be used as a besamim, and two candles that are held together are Havdalah candle, and if all you have is one candle, you could even make a bracha borim ereish on one flame if that's all you have, even if you don't combine it to be a torch. Or on a light bulb if you have no choice. What about the last question? What if sealed kosher meals they bring you on Shabbos, it's double wrap from a kosher standpoint, which is what we'll begin with next week. The kosher's of it, it's not a problem, but they heated the food for you on Shabbos. So you're not allowed to ask the non-Jew to heat food for you on Shabbos, nor are you allowed to benefit from food that was heated for you as well. So if they heated food on their own, which is dry, if you're in Shmir Shabbos, if you're in our Smichas Chaver, you're going to appreciate this. If they heated Davar Yavish that was cooked for you, then you're allowed to benefit from it, because Ein Bishel Achar Bishel. So it's not a Maisa Shabbos. There was nothing meaningful that was done to it. You're allowed to eat it while it's hot. Can't lechatchila ask them to heat it for you. But if they heated it for you and brought it to you, then you're allowed to consume the fully cooked dry food. But if they heated a liquid, you have to come to Smichas Chaver to know what qualifies as a liquid. What's a liquid? What's a solid? What's the percentage? How do you identify? We've been discussing that on Sunday mornings. But if they bring you food which has a liquid or is liquidy, and when they heat it, now they've heated a liquid, then you would not be allowed to benefit. So what are you going to do? You're going to go hungry? No, you have to wait until it cools off. And once it's cooled off, so therefore you're no longer benefiting from the fact that they heated it for you, now you'll be able to eat it on Shabbos. Okay, so these are some of the issues. Mirtz Hashem will pick up with the kashrus components next week. Can you get cut up vegetables? Can you get baked potato? Can you get eggs? Can you eat? What can you eat on the ship? We'll talk about that in Mirtz Hashem next week. Yes, Parsha class tomorrow.